February 28th, we'll come to order. I think 29th, leap year day is tomorrow, isn't it? Okay, and we have bills up, I believe. Senator Rosen, welcome to our committee. Senate File 1693, and this, I believe, is a bill that is actually not in our committee. It's in capital investment, but I believe the chair wants us to consider this. This is similar to one that we had discussed earlier, the discuss and perhaps take a position or a recommendation to the capital investment committee regarding the policy of the cooperative facilities grant program.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I really appreciate this opportunity, Madam Chair. And as you said, this is an informational hearing. You did have a similar bill last week with the Rushford-Peterson bill and applying for these cooperative facility grants. There is a handout, members, and there's some pictures of what we're facing down at United South Central in Wells.
I think they're in your folders.
They also have another handout from us.
And there is another handout, too, with them. This has been in front of this committee. Madam Chair, you can tell by the size of this folder here since 07, and we have been looking desperately for some assistance with the school district. There are situations out there where school districts have they've combined, they've got declining enrollment, they've got aging facilities, and we're in a situation where we have to address that. We had the bonding committee was down there several years ago. We've been in front of the education with Senator Stump many, many times and greatly appreciate that. And so we're in front of you again looking at a bonding request for $20 million. Since 02, there's been three voting opportunities addressing this facility, and every time that voting gap gets narrow, you've got some very great farmland, ag land down there, and so this is the problem. Since the last vote, the school board chose to close the Keister School, which was in that school district. So this would be for a new building, $20 million. However, we will take whatever we can get from the bonding committee. They have determined that remodeling is probably not going to make it, because when you look at these pictures, it's a very stark reality of what's going on in the school district. And I do have some wonderful testifiers here, the superintendent and the past board president. But there was five grants totaling under $32 million were made in the more restrictive version of this program in the late 1980s and the 1990s. There's been no grants since 94. The program, this cooperative facility grants program, was expanded in 07 to include all facilities, not just the secondary facilities. We're unable to qualify for the debt service equalization because the farmland and the rural farmland issue and the cost of the farmland would go up greatly, the taxes on that. So like I said, I would greatly appreciate anything we can get from the bonding committee, and I do appreciate this hearing. With that, Madam President, I do have Ms. Christy Wetzel with me, and she's been here before.
It's Madam Chair.
Oh, Madam Chair.
President.
That's close. Can I just call you Madam President?
It's worse as you get older.
It is bad.
It's been a long day.
Yeah, it's getting longer.
Christy Wetzel.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and committee members, I just want to thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of Senate File 1693. As many of you may be familiar with, Senator Rosen, Representative Cornish, myself, and many members of our school community have spent years working on the language to change the language change of the current Cooperative Facilities Grant. This is my fifth year testifying before you in hopes of funding the Cooperative Facilities Grants that would help USC. Allow me to share some information about our school district and our building. United South Central Public Schools are located in the south central part of Minnesota. We serve students from the communities of Bryceland, Keister, Walters, Freeborn, Easton, and Wells. We consolidated over 20 years ago and have experienced the scars of consolidation. Three communities experienced the closing of their school buildings due to declining enrollment and budget cuts. Our remaining building is located in the city of Wells, and some of you, I believe, toured our building. Our building is one of the oldest in the state. The high school dates back to 1932, and it definitely shows its wear. The handouts that you have include more extensive details of our building's deficiencies, but I'd like to touch on just a few. Most of our classrooms are 23 to 33% smaller than state guidelines. 20 traditional classrooms are now used as special education rooms, federally and state mandated student support programs, and preschool classrooms. Our classrooms do not have the space for computers, and they lack the infrastructure to support the networks and the electrical needs of today's technology. We have minimal building security measures to prevent intruders from accessing student classrooms. We also suffer from structural deficiencies. Our heating system is inefficient, and it dates back to 1932. Our main water supply is fed through pipes dating back to 1932, and in many cases are nearly plugged with mineral deposits, and they leak. Needless to say, the drinking water is foul. Our main electrical service panel uses fuses, and it dates back to the 1930s. All windows are single-paned and drafty, and on many occasions have ice buildup on the inside. There's no safe drop-off and pickup locations for our students because our school is located on a busy highway. We've had three failed new building bond referendums. In April 2002, we had a $32 million proposed building. 25% of our voters voted yes, 75% voted no. At the time, nearly $15 million of this referendum would have been paid through debt service equalization. In May of 2005, a $24 million building was proposed. 40% voted yes, 60% voted no. Only $200,000 would have been provided through debt service equalization. In December of 2005, we went back to the voters with the same proposal. 42% voted yes, 58% voted no. What we are proposing for our voters today, or for this coming fall, is a new pre-K building on one site. It would cost approximately $28 million and was our best option of the nearly 15 different options we explored. The building is designed to meet the ever-changing dynamics of a 21st century education, and it's designed to be cost-effective and efficient. United South Central is in a unique and unfavorable situation with regard to passing a bond referendum to support building a new school. Here is what makes USC so unique. We have over 50% of our students qualifying for free or reduced price lunches, and I realize this is not uncommon around the state. However, we truly live in an impoverished area. Looking at only the largest town in our six communities, the city of Wells, the average family income is $38,000. The state average is $55,600. In stark contrast, the average home value in Wells is $75,000. The state average is well over $200,000. We all know property taxes are what pay for new schools. When home values are significantly lower than the state average, so are the property taxes based on their values. If this was USC's only concern, we would still qualify for debt service equalization formula and possibly see state aid dollars to assist in the cost of a new building. But as our housing values have decreased, our agricultural land values have skyrocketed. This is where the dilemma is created. Our ag land values, which are not indicative of our communities, and declining enrollment have caused USC to fall off the formula for debt service equalization. Ag land is owned by a relatively small number of people, and very few of the owners purchase land at the inflated current values. Many of the owners are farming their own land as their livelihood and renting additional land from landowners who have retired from farming. When we held our last vote on a new building, we knew agricultural landowners would be paying nearly 72% of the cost of a new school with higher taxes. Some land taxes would have increased as much as $6.40 an acre for just the school portion. We'll fast forward 7 years to the present, and the situation is even more unsettling. Agricultural land prices have increased again, home values have fallen, and it may be safe to say that ag land owners will pay over 80% of the cost of a $28 million new school. Ag land taxes could go as high as $16.49 an acre. That's an additional $1,319.20 on an 80-acre parcel in taxes. 80 acres really isn't a lot of farmland. Much of this would be passed on to the renters of this farmland. We live in an area that exists because of farming. We have very limited industries. In fact, our school is the second largest employer in all of our six communities. Minnesota's Constitution in Article 13, Section 1, calls for a uniform system of public schools. It continues on by stating, "The legislature shall make provisions by taxation or otherwise as will secure a thorough and efficient system of public schools throughout the state." The $20 million outlined in Senate File 1693 would allow USC the opportunity to build a school and level the playing field in regard to the small number of ag land owners and the taxes they would pay. It's an opportunity to provide our students with a building that is uniform in regard to schools throughout the state. In fact, one might even argue that it was modest. I have enclosed in your handout the blueprint of the proposed new school, the tax impact information, remodel options that we explored, and the cost associated with it. And you'll also see the pictures of our current facility. I encourage you to look through the packet that I provided, and I am confident that approval of Senate File 1693 and the funding of it would tip the scales and allow USC to finally build the school building our students deserve. I implore you to examine this situation and support Senate File 1693, helping USC to provide a safe school able to empower our children with the tools necessary to prepare them for success for generations to come. With the generous help of senators like yourselves, USC will be able to provide a building to meet the needs of children instead of inhibiting their potential. Thank you so much for your time and attention, and I welcome any questions you may have.
Madam Chair, I really appreciate the opportunity again. And, you know, this is a situation that we're grappling with. We've been grappling with this for a very long time. And I'm not sure which direction to go, but obviously you have the school district that's got this huge in territory. And they've consolidated about as much as they possibly can with closing of a school also. I'm not sure what the direction is except to go to bonding, but... And if you've talked about these grants and how to, the recommendations going forward with the capital investment committee. But the big difference with this bill versus the other bills that it brought up is it also waives the timelines required in statute for the grant application and extends the time period after a grant is awarded for a district to conduct the bond issue for the local share of bonds for the program. But we'll keep trying. We'll keep coming back, and very proud of this school district. Worked very closely with these folks, and unfortunately, they were carved out of my new Senate district. And so, I'd like to continue to serve them, but it's one of those things. So we're getting a little emotional here.
Excuse me. Still have part of our district.
Yes, might have still a little part. I have Superintendent Dr. Jerry Jensen here also with me. If there's any questions,
I can't. Recall just how many times we've heard this.
A lot.
This bill. It is a challenge. And it's a challenge for us to, and I think Senator Senjum wanted us to deal with the policy, because I think the policy that there was no sunset on this program after, you know, consolidation had occurred. And so, you know, if you open it, there's probably quite a few out there that might want to walk through that. So what we do is going to be, I think, rather important.
Mm-hmm. Well, if there's, Madam Chair, if there's continuing discussions, I would certainly love to be a part of that or assist in any way. And if you have a working group or whatever, but I would certainly love to, sure, to be a part of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. And does the Superintendent like to... address.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you again for giving us an opportunity to present our case. I would only add a couple of comments to what has already been said. I think the United South Central School District is somewhat unique. I know there's concerns about what the floodgates would open if you might fund something like this, but I don't know how many school districts that are out there that have combined six communities, four different independent school districts into one, and now as you've closed all those buildings, and we end up with just one building in one of those communities. As you all know, it takes quite a toll on those communities where you've closed buildings. I think if the kids could vote, it wouldn't be a problem because they get over those kinds of issues in about a week. But it seems like adults have a little more difficult time, especially when they played on rival ball teams and everything else that goes with that. And that's one of the complications, in addition to the tax impact that we're facing, is that there are still some of those difficult feelings that people have within the district. It's hard for them to vote to put a school someplace other than the community in which they can remember their school being. So that's just another complication that's added to USC's problem. Beyond that, I don't really have anything to add. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Vano.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I do remember hearing this story many times and seeing these photos many times, and I just hate that we haven't done something for you, and I feel like there has to be a way because we do have this constitutional requirement that every child has an equal education, access to an equal education. I always like to say an equal and outstanding education. And I think when you're in a building that is not sufficient and that, you know, it's sort of like when you start to tackle a big project, you clean your room first because you know that when things are orderly around you, you think better. And so I liken it to that, and I think we ought to find a way to take care of it.
Senator Bonoff, I hate to correct you, but it's there is equal is not in the Constitution. It's general and uniform.
Oh. Of what the- Well, Madam Chair, so my adding outstanding, I've also added equal. Yeah. General and uniform.
But that's all right.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions of the superintendent? Or you're on the school board?
Yes. Actually, it's Madam Chair, it's the end of my, well, I'm finishing my ninth year.
Oh, my.
Much wiser.
So, well, if there are no further questions, do you have any questions of the author of the bill? Then, Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, I heard Senator Rosen refer to it as her district, and I was just wondering what Senator DeCrieff thought of that. You don't have to answer.
It's currently my district.
Senator DeCrieff thanks you. So I think perhaps we could have a little bit more discussion. We heard the situation in Rushford-Peterson, which is the same but not the same. You've pointed out if you're going to one-up them on the number of districts that were consolidated or the number of communities that were included in that consolidation, it's I think you exceed them. But what the policy is of this particular approach or whether a new policy needs to be created or just what we do. So thank you very much.
Yes, Madam Chair, I do have a question. If yes. Council, Mr. Nauman, could say how many school districts would line up. I mean, is there a pecking order? Obviously by the pictures and from testimony last week, those are two serious ones, but is there other school districts that would talk about opening the floodgates? What would this do?
Well, Mr. Nauman, you refresh our memory. I know you provided us information with how many had, in fact, used this grant process. And I don't know if you compared it with the number that possibly were eligible.
Madam Chair and members, good question. Two separate issues. Yeah. Two separate questions. We provided information that the last time we talked about this one, Rushford-Peterson was before us, that we've used this statute five times. Back then, it was the cooperative secondary facilities, and it was limited to secondary facilities. We're talking about something a little bit different now because in 2007, the statute was opened and broadened. We had a little bit of a discussion about the wisdom of making that opening. In addition to that, what I can...
Before you go on, 2007, we broadened it, but did we do... was there an assumption that there was a recent consolidation, or did it go back to whenever?
Madam Chair, I introduced a little bit of a new concept there.
Yes.
And I apologize for skipping past it too quickly. There was not an assumption that the legislature had a conversation about the then cooperative secondary facilities grants, and language was adopted that made it that opened it up so that it didn't have to be a secondary facility. There were no grants that were added at that time, or in fact since 1994 there have been no use of this statute. However, to be eligible, you have to have had a consolidation, as we talked about last time, since July 1st, 1980. So you have to either be two or more districts that want to shake hands together and build a facility, or you have to be a consolidated district. And as the testimony we've heard today, as well as when Rushford Peterson were before us, they consolidated on or about the 1990 time frame. So any school district that either gets together with another or as a consolidated district since July 1st, 1980 is eligible to apply. We handed out that list the last time we talked about this. It was about 5 pages. I presume any of those would potentially be eligible.
So 5 pages of small print?
Madam Chair, we do have a habit around here of making small print. This one was not as small as some.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Mr. Nauman, where a lot of those consolidations have? Do they have special needs? I mean, this is. Obviously, the two that have come forward are.
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, last thing I want to do is be flip here, but I haven't met a school district that doesn't view themselves as having special needs in some form. I guess what I would suggest is that the criteria of this particular program doesn't depend on a free and reduced lunch count, for example, or a special ed concentration of some sort. Those are some of the traditional special needs that folks tend to talk about. The formula itself doesn't depend on a criteria in that way.
Okay. I understand you have a board meeting tonight and you may wish to be released. We're probably not going to resolve this I'm not sure. I shouldn't be a pessimist here. We may have a stroke of genius being proposed, but we thank you very much for coming up here and testifying before us, and we will release you if you'd like to be able to wend your way back home. I don't know what the weather is doing down your way, but it looks like it's starting to act.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Madam
Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion here that we might give counsel to Senator Sendrum?
Madam Chair and members, with your permission, I don't know if you want to delve into some of the documents that Mr. Haranica and I have prepared. I know you've got another bill that's going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah.
But there may be some. We have done a fiscal analysis of both of the two proposals, laid them against the various proposals. The last time we talked about this, there was conversation about why don't you think about maximum effort, why don't you traditionally use the debt service equalization. And we've taken the data from these various programs and from these various districts and run them through the state programs. And I think with maybe 10 minutes of time at a future date, we can walk you through. I think the math becomes pretty clear why they're choosing to come and ask you for this. And then it's a secondary question about whether you think it's a good idea, but at least you can see them through the math. We've got a spreadsheet that does that, and we can show that to you in a future time.
Well, it was kind of interesting, the testimony from the school board member that described the progression of the referenda in relation to the debt service equalization. It was a much larger amount that was coming at the first time. If that had been taken, they would be in far better shape. But then as the property values increased, then the debt service equalization goes down and to the point where there's nothing there. And for those who are being stretched with having to pay those high property taxes, I'm not sure how you sell a bond issue.
Well, and Madam Chair, at your pleasure, we can walk you through
sure.
that. I think it's pretty clear what the two districts are confronting and why they would be here to ask you for assistance.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Thomas.
And if If this were sent to the bonding committee and it were put in the bonding bill, it would basically count against the amount of bonding capacity that we have, or it would add to the total of the bill, in other words, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we don't actually have the bill here.
No.
It's at the Capital Investment Committee, and they, but they've asked for counsel because of exactly the things that we've been laying out, is that there's others that would probably, maybe not quite the same circumstances, but that may well want to take advantage of it if we were to do that.
And it may be time to reopen that program. You never know.
Well, that's what we need to look at. And perhaps with whatever the local share might be, based on something different than value, establishing some other criteria or whatever. But I think there's it's clear this isn't an issue that's going to go away.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bono.
Madam Chair, it seems as though if we did determine it was a program that was worth continuing for school districts, that the Education Department should have a target with regard to the bonding bill. Don't you think?
Yep, it would seem appropriate.
Yeah.
That's, and I know that the Capital Investment Committee is probably struggling with, as they always do, there's always more requests than they may have a bottom line to fund, and to make those priorities is going to be part of that challenge.
Yeah.
So, okay, well then we will come back to it, and I hope you will all kind of reflect on it. If you've got any brilliant ideas, please, and even if you don't think they're so brilliant, bring them forward anyway, and see what they might bring us to a point of making some policy suggestions. Okay, thank you. Carla, I'll turn it over to you. And did you hand out some stuff on this one?
Yes.
There's still a fair amount of static in the system. I don't know what's happening, and I can hear it. whether there's now, Senator Thomas only claims it's Blackberries that are doing the problem and not cell phones. I think media says cell phones and any cellular computers or whatever. Something just happened. It's cleared up. Maybe you should just keep waving that and it'll clear it up.
Senator
Sorry,
Olson.
Out of order here.
Yeah, Senator Olson moves that Senate File 1531 be removed from the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion passes. Senator Olson.
Thank you very much. This is, I think, day three that we're getting some words in on the. Is it day three or day two? Where do they all go? We did get testimony from a lot of the supporters of the bill and a couple of the folks that had concerns about the bill. And there are a couple more that are on the list, and there certainly wasn't equal time for them, but if there are other people that would like to testify that have concerns that weren't addressed in the amendment so far. I should say that we do have an additional, I'd like to make an oral amendment to clarify the particular for-profit schools that that would be eligible if the person was denied entrance into a Minsky program. And that is on the committee engrossment, CE1, on page line 1.17, delete 141 and insert 136A. Thank you. I'm trying to read lips here.
Maybe register that way.
And Council, would you like to read that?
Madam Chair, I'll reread what Senator Olson said, and then needs one addition. Senator Olson said on line or page 1, line 17, delete 141 and insert 136A. In addition on that line, delete the word licensed and insert registered.
Okay, does everyone have the amendment? Okay. All those in favor.
Can you tell us what that does?
Okay. These are two sections that are represent schools that are processed, registered, licensed in one way or another by the Office of Higher Education. One of them is, let's see, how can I describe? I think one is a or certified degree granting group. That's the one that we are putting in versus ones that are more narrowly focused on a particular area. It might be a trade related, but they're probably shorter term and not necessarily connected into a degree granting program.
Senator Tomasoni?
Madam Chair. Well, maybe Council should just explain it to me instead of handing it to me, because by the time I get done reading it, I won't understand it anyway.
And Council, maybe you could explain that to all of us, please. Because, good question, Senator Tomasoni.
Because I think the change is from 141 to 136A, and I don't exactly know what that means, and so maybe she could explain that.
Okay, yes, Madam Council. Chair and members, these are some printouts from the Office of Higher Education's website, and I'll just kind of do a little list. For 141, they say private career schools that are licensed under 141, if they offer any program below the associate degree level and are not registered as a private institution, prepare students for an occupation or employment, provide educational programs for 16 hours or more, and enroll, advertise, or solicit students in Minnesota. But it's that licensure is not the same as accreditation. Then registered colleges and approved degrees under 136A are Minnesota private colleges and universities that offer associate or higher degrees. They're could be out-of-state private institutions offering associate or higher degrees in Minnesota, or out-of-state public institutions offering post-secondary education in Minnesota, or non-Minnesota individuals, entities, or institutions which contract with Minnesota institutions to provide training for which credits may be awarded that can apply toward a degree. So I think one difference is the licensed career schools don't offer associate degree level education, where the registered colleges and approved programs under 136A have to offer at least an associate degree.
And thank you, Ms. Butler. Discussion. Senator Tomasoni.
And so the registered colleges under 136A can be out of state. Does that mean online learning, or what does that mean?
Ms. Butler.
Madam Chair, members, they can be out of state if they offer their education in Minnesota. So I guess that could be an online. They don't have to. But the ones that are there's also ones that are non-Minnesota entities that contract with Minnesota institutions. So there's a list. I don't know what organizations fall under which of those categories based on this list.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, this does include schools like Dunwoody and the Minnesota School of Business, that are degree granting that have been long established in the state. We haven't changed there, that it encompasses academic as well as career tech in that list, I do believe. But the bill is only opening the door for a 9th or 10th grader to enroll in a beginning course in a career tech program.
And Madam
Senator
Chair,
Tomasoni.
And Senator Olson, would we be better off taking that line out of there?
Well,
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni, no, I don't think so. We would like to see the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, because of the tech colleges, participate, and we were hoping that this might be an incentive for them to do so.
Well, I'm thinking about
Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair and Ms. Senator Olson, I'm thinking about the for-profit line, because we just made a change that seems to me broadens the scope by quite a bit. And I'm not sure that we should go down this for-profit line with this bill. I mean, I'd rather see it just, because it almost kind of smacks of vultures. And then when you start saying out of state, then I start really worrying about it. And so okay. I'm wondering where.
Senator.
Senator Olson. I'm leaving that up to you, Senator Olson. But
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, the only point at which they can enter that is if they are refused and don't have an option available through the state Minsky system.
You want to keep
and
it in.
Senator Tomasoni.
if they're accepted and can take that course, a course starting there, then they wouldn't have the option. This is not a wide open door.
So, Senator Olson, you would probably remember this. The 1996 OLA report actually recommended this change.
Yes.
So I just wanted to make sure the committee was aware of that. Some of us weren't here in 1996, but Senator Tomasoni, were you?
Yes, I was, but I was not in the Senate. I was in the House, but I don't remember.
You don't remember the OLA recommendation?
I'm not responsible for anything that happened before I was in the Senate.
Understood, Senator Tomasoni. Senator Sieben, I think you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Olson, I appreciate this discussion. And just to expand it a little bit more, I have a fundamental problem, I think, with allowing for-profit trade schools to take money that would be going to our public schools, which are already experiencing a significant crunch on their budgets. Many of these for-profit schools, in my experience, can advertise on television, on the radio, and I don't see how, I mean, they could continue to do that and now expand their marketing to try to pluck students from our public schools to get those dollars to follow them into their private for-profit institutions. And I just think that that's, as Senator Tomasoni said, a door that we may not want to open. And so because of that, I'm going to oppose the bill unless you're willing to take that out.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Sieben, I think that, number one, I'm not sure how many of the private for-profit trade schools would want to participate. Because if you look at the formula, they will only get for one course the proportion of the way that is calculated within what the secondary school would get that would follow them to the post-secondary school. They have to accept that, and they can't charge more. And I suspect that most of them are more costly than that. So whether they would want to participate in it, I'm not sure. And we don't know that yet.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
I think there's an assumption, too, that this would open the floodgates. I don't think that it will. It's an option of choice, and the focus, if you recall when we were talking about this bill, is that we're concerned about the dropout rate that we haven't been able to turn around very effectively, and that young people, many of them learn in different environments and in an applied way. And we have coupled that with the emphasis that we placed on the academics has diminished the opportunities that young people have to prepare in high schools. And I think there's a greater awareness now that we have foreclosed on some opportunities that would not only lead to some well-paying jobs but are greatly needed if we are going to have our economy grow in areas that, particularly in manufacturing and others, that not only they're not just hands-on, but they do require some of the technological abilities that come with greater math and science. And we're trying to ignite that spark. And if they can find an avenue through a beginning course in one of these, I think that it's going to put them back into their high schools rather than dropping out to take more classes. These are some presumptions that we'd like to test. And I think that will be, it will be watched very closely. And if it's doing something other than what that intention is, then it should be relooked at. I'm not trying to open those floodgates, but I think that I don't have the actual language from the legislative auditor, but they specifically...
Senator Olson, I've requested that Mr. Nauman get that for us.
Okay.
So we will be getting that OLA report from 1996 that recommended this very thing, actually, that PSEOB expanded and allowed for use for for-profit higher ed institutions as well. So you'll be getting that shortly, members. Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chair, or I'm sorry, Madam Chair, and Senator Olson, just to follow up, though, I think that if this is, it already is an expansion because we'd be allowing 9th and 10th graders, and we have a good public community college system here in Minnesota, that includes a number of great technical schools. So that would seem to me a first step, is to allow students to attend these public trade schools and public institutions and keep the money, see how it works that way, because they do offer, as you said, great courses for that helps prepare students for careers in technology fields and manufacturing, for instance. But that would seem to be a more reasoned, moderate approach to take, is first allow students to attend those public institutions, see how it's working, and then perhaps come back and revisit it. But again, I mean, we just talked yesterday about the use of public resources to be expended on allowing public employees, in this case teachers, to be able to make communications with lawmakers. I can't help but compare that to this, where we're allowing our public tax dollars to go to for-profit institutions, where they can go out and try to solicit students to perhaps fill classes that are unfilled or they have openings. It may not be as much money as they get if a student would enroll and pay a full price tuition, but it just seems to me that isn't a proper use of our public tax dollars. Even perhaps I disagree with the legislative auditor, and we can look at those results, but I still just think it's a really concerning path for us to pursue.
Senator Sieben, we do something very similar to that with our grant dollars, our state grant dollars. We do allow those state grant dollars to be used at for-profit institutions as well, so it's something we currently are doing. Senator Olson, did you have any comments?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think the concern is that, right now, with the current post-secondary enrollment options, there are fairly high bars set by the post-secondary institution for entry into a program. And that's one of the things, if students are turned off, they may not have performed very well in their high school and meet those criteria. And that's why the concern is, if they can, in fact, reject them rather than open that door, they may not have that opportunity. And this is about the kids. It's not about us or the adults. And, I think the Minsk, you can speak for themselves. I don't know if anybody's here today, but I understand that they as long as they still do have the opportunity to reject, that they were not going to oppose the bill. But we may want some clarity on that particular point, too, as to whether there will be opportunities for some of these young people to make that choice.
Thank you, Senator Olson. While we're waiting for the OLA report to get back to us, if Gary Amoroso, Roger Arneson, I see, or Dr. John Bezik is in the audience, if they could come to the table, please.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Roger Ernst, and I represent the elementary and secondary school principals. We're here to talk about the bill and concerns that we have and problems about it. And I would say that in the end, we think this bill should probably be set aside. Let me go over some of the problems that school principals have with the bill. First of all, this is a blending of several concepts. One is the PSEO program, which is a highly successful, rigorous college program for 11th and 12th graders. It's been very, very successful. The higher ed people have set very high standards for kids to get into these programs. It's very popular with parents. And that particular change in the law, which occurred in the mid-80s, drove another new program called College in the Schools. So the PSEO involved the kids actually leaving their school and going to a post-secondary institution. And in response to that, a lot of parents wanted the kids to have the credits, but they didn't like the idea of children leaving the campus. And the schools didn't like the idea of losing the kids. So we created this program called College in the Schools, where they get the college credit. We teach those schools on campus, on the school campuses. And that's been very successful. Indeed, that program has, to a large extent, eclipsed PSEO. If you talk to some of your schools, Senator Torres Ray's district, I talked to William Smith, the principal at Southwest High School. How many off-campus students do you have in PSEO? 24. We had John Bezek here from Tartan High School in North St. Paul. How many off-campus PSEO kids do you have? It's about 30. But the college and the school kids are much more numerous. This bill changes who those kids are and what the standards are for getting into the programs and different programs. And as you heard from the discussion here, 136, I actually went through that because the senator told us that's where this was going to go. And that's a list of about 138 institutions and that Senator Sieben and Senator Tomasoni were asking about. But those, and they go from St. John's and St. Ben's, those institutions, to some others that are very specific about production for music things, to one program that he actually focused on midwifery. But it's a soup-to-nuts list. And a lot of them are online programs as well. So you do want to take a look at that list. Fundamentally, school principals do not believe that 9th and 10th graders should be leaving campus to go to other programs, whether it's PSEO or whether it's career and technical. You make that decision, but we think that's wrong. As you work this down, one of the things that is unclear to us is it says that the students can enroll in a career or technical education course offered by a Minnesota State college or university. The intent is somehow to narrow this or limit this a bit more, but I don't think we actually know what that means. And looking, and I'm not sure that Minsky knows what that means, and if you were going to proceed with this, you'd want to figure that out. If it's going to be narrowing, you need to know what that narrowing is going to be. Here's a real problem for us, and you had some discussion about this before. But this reform, and let me say, if this reform was we are going to create a college and technical program in the schools, that we're going to parallel, a career and technical program in the schools. We're going to parallel the college and the schools program, and we're going to do that in career and technical. And we're going to fund it. We'd say, great, because we need to do all of those things that Senator Olson talks about, reducing the dropout rate, having these programs available. But what you're doing here is that you're funding this program and this idea out of the school's budget. I mean, we're going to still have to run these schools because the parents that pay the taxes and send their kids to these schools expect that we have a comprehensive high school program.
Mr. Arneson,
yes.
I just want to let you and the committee know that we'll be voting at 4:20, and I know that we have other testifiers, so we want to make sure that everyone has a chance to testify.
I can take a hint, Madam Chair.
No, I just want you to speed it up a little bit
so
the rest of your colleagues have ample opportunity as well.
And I appreciate that. I guess the point that I was going to make about that is that I do think it's important for you to see that this is a reform that gets funded out of our budgets. And some people do claim that this has more of the look of a voucher program. that this is money that you sent to the school districts to operate a comprehensive school, and that you're going to take that out and give it to someone to go to a career and technical institution.
Well, Mr. Arneson, not to prolong, but I do need to ask, is that any different than PSEO as it is currently? And then secondly, all the concerns that you mentioned, I wasn't here in the 80s, but I suspect some people in this room were, and I'm wondering if some of those same concerns were voiced about the adoption of the original PSEO program.
I was here in the 80s, Madam Chair. There's not enough time to go through all that. I think, just in response to that, that we learned how to do this right, and we learned to do this right when we created College in the Schools and you helped fund that program. Minsky didn't like all of that College in the School program when we put together. I think that's a real good program. I think that's the way that, we ought to go on this as well. Because of the level of rigor of the program, it benefited so many kids. This is not a rigor program.
Mr. Arneson, am I correct to understand then that you don't necessarily support PSEO except for College in the Schools? Is that what you were saying?
I don't think I have to come to that today, Madam Chair. I do think that school administrators have serious concerns. Let me take that back. I mean, I think we think PSEO works out very well for some kids that ought not any longer be in the school.
Because Senator of the Olson.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Arneson, it's interesting that we used to have some pretty solid career tech programs in the high schools, and they've kind of gone by the wayside. Would the schools be clamoring to get some of these programs back in their schools? Because we haven't seen that. Mm-hmm. Senator Stumpf and I have worked for a number of years, not just to continue to fund the minimal funding that was there, but last year to enhance it. We didn't quite make it, and we'd still like to do that so that we wouldn't either, at the very least, lose anymore, but hopefully bring them into the high school or in some, you know, there were cooperative ways in which then most of those have fallen by the wayside, and those were decisions that were made at the local level. And so it doesn't give us great confidence that without some extra nudge that we would, in fact, get that to happen. And, we know that at our post-secondary institutions, we have some, well-equipped facilities. They're more accessible to some students than they are to others. But we are concerned about the ones, not that are performing well, because, as I said, we're concerned about those that are getting turned off and aren't functioning well in the current structure of a high school. And need something different, and this is one more option of trying one course, a beginning level course, in one of these programs, as a way of determining, hopefully lighting the fire for the recognition of what they need to have, because many of them I don't think even understand or acknowledge what these jobs are like that are going unfilled, that require some skills and some competence, are well-paying, but they don't have a concept of them, and they're not getting introduced to that at our high schools. So, there isn't going to be a silver bullet in any one of these things, and if everybody kind of takes after every idea that comes before us and thinks that this is it, and we're going to squash this now before it blows up our whole system, this isn't going to do that. There's going to be students will make that choice along with their parents. Are they ready to leave the high school reality, or are they threatening to leave it without that they're just plain not going to continue and end their education? And might this be a trigger to help them stay in school and get the kind of education and go on from there? So I would, I've never had anybody call me from any of the schools asking for help to enhance their career and tech programs within their schools. And I don't know if this would do that in our high schools as the PSEO did for College of the Schools, and including many more AP classes. I just got the latest report. We're the fifth fastest growing state in terms of AP courses. There's a lot of good things that have come out of on the academic side, but we're floundering on the career and tech side that serves a number of students
They're not students that need to take and unscrew their heads and set it on a shelf. They need to be thinking and challenged, and we know that they are able and can learn, but they need to have that spark ignited. So I feel very strongly that we are missing the boat if we don't take advantage of an opportunity like this to use and bring existing programs and capacity that's available to some of these young people to help light that spark.
Madam Chair. Senator Olson, thank you. I think you just gave your closing comments. Although I do know we have a couple other folks who want to testify.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I do have a question from Mr. Aronson, because I think that it is important. For me, it's very important to clarify this. I am a strong supporter of your concept. I believe, Senator Olson, that you, Senator Olson, that you are right on track with respect to increasing opportunities and figuring out alternatives for higher education. I support you with that, and I want to work with you in a very real, purposeful way. I think what Mr. Aronson is saying is that we have established these opportunities for some students, and I happen to know a lot of, you know, my own kid right now is taking some higher education credits. So PSEO and College in the Schools are important programs that I think we support, and there is bipartisan support. I believe you support. The access to technical training is something I would like to offer. I think what he's saying is, if we truly believe in that, could we expand the resources so that we can do parallel offerings? I thought that is what you wanted to do. My understanding was that we wanted to expand and open opportunities for students who may not be eligible or willing or able or intellectually capable, whatever we want to call, ready for these programs that already exist, which are very successful for some kids, including my own kid. So could we clarify that? Because I think I'm unclear. I think this is an issue of resources. I think that the concept is something I want to support. But when we take out options for certain kids in order to open options to others, I believe that that's unfair. And I don't know why we will do that. I'm kind of confused as to why would you like to do that.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, I'm not sure what you mean by taking away options for kids. When we started post-secondary enrollment options, we didn't start College in the Schools. Mm-hmm. We started post-secondary enrollment options. And when that started to work, all of a sudden there was a clamor on the part of the schools to expand opportunities for students to stay within their own campus and participate in other things, especially if they were going for several courses. Some students have come to be able to take a whole load at college because they've been able to align their schedules appropriately. Others have just taken a course or two and stay engaged in their campus. That is not. That's essentially what this is saying as well. To come with there has been no clamor to increase the opportunities for the career and technical that I have seen, and we do have the capacity and the equipment, and why wouldn't we open that door and allow at least for that exposure that could ignite, and maybe if the schools are smart, they will link back and so that people can see, that students can see where some of the courses that they have back on the high school campus can, in fact, enhance the decision or the choice that they may want to make going forward. So sometimes you change the behavior by starting here. If you just say, you know, here's money and go and do this, we're not going to get as efficient and a use of our resources as I think if we have this kind of a carrot.
Thank you,
Senator
Olson.
I want to follow up on that, Madam Chair.
Senator Torres Ray, quickly, please.
My question to you, Senator, is why don't we fund it? There are a lot of things that I would like to do.
Senator Torres Ray, this isn't a funding year or a funding
Senator, this is the finance committee.
At all.
This is finance, policy, education. This is a very, very pertinent question. This is our finance, policy, education committee.
Well, Senator Torres Ray, go ahead, Senator Olson.
Senator Torres Ray, maybe Senator Stump can help answer that, too. I mean, we've tried. We've tried for a number of years to do that. It's easy to say, well, why don't we just fund it? That has not been successful.
Madam Chair and Senator.
They're competing
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are competing interests. And there's always a bit of tension between the academic and the career tech. It's been there as long as I've been involved in education. And yet, that, I think, is doing I'm not willing to put all my eggs in a career tech basket either, because I have respect for and belief in and in the full range of opportunities for young people. And I think that we need to have some balance. And we've gotten out of balance.
Thank you, Senator. Members, if I might mention, the OLA report from 1996 has been handed out. You might notice the last item has been mentioned, something for you to consider, the legislature should consider allowing private colleges and for-profit vocational schools that are eligible for the state grant program to take part in the post-secondary enrollment options. And what I'd like you to know is this higher ed may be able to help us with some of these questions that we're grappling with here today. This bill is scheduled to go to higher ed next, so I just want you to know we don't have to solve all those issues today, but certainly higher ed will weigh in heavily on some of the concerns that were brought up today.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, it would be helpful, I know this is one sentence, but it would be helpful to see if in the report that they had a more elaborate rationale for why they included that recommendation.
Senator Olson, we'll make sure that this is taken up in higher ed. I'm sure they'll cover this area well. Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the time is running short, so I will be very brief. I want to thank you for providing an opportunity. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators and would like to share a few concerns about the bill in its current format. MASA fully supports providing our students with enrichment opportunities, with rigorous opportunities for learning. We just believe that as a 9th and 10th grader, those opportunities can best be accomplished within our high school campuses. In terms of looking at a 9th to 10th grader, one of our concerns is, are they socially and emotionally prepared to be successful in a college campus setting? We want to make sure that we always provide our students with opportunities to be successful, and that is an issue that I would ask you to consider. One of the other concerns that we have is the concept of access to this opportunity for 9th and 10th graders. Within the post-secondary options for 11th and 12th graders, a majority of those students have transportation through the use of their own vehicles, and it makes it easier for them to get to and from the campus. 9th and 10th graders, that would probably create more of a challenge. Not all of our families may have parents or neighbors or family members that can provide that transportation. And one of the conversations that I've heard is, well, possibly then would schools be required to provide that transportation? You've already heard Mr. Aronson talking about the concept that students that would participate in this, dollars would be removed from the public schools and would go to the other school with the child. And I don't believe we're in a position to provide any additional funding for students to be transported in a program like this. One of the other concerns that we would have is that generally when a student's engaged in a program like this, it takes up more than one period of a traditional block of time within their own school. And if that were to occur, would we be putting that student in a more challenging position where they wouldn't be accruing the same number of credits as their classmates as a 9th grader and as a 10th grader? Just something for consideration. Again, we very much do support the concept of providing students with rigorous opportunities, but would ask that you consider that those opportunities are best met on campus of the schools. And in terms of 9-12 buildings and why we've begun to see some of our career and tech programs being reduced. As a person that had to make recommendations to a school board as recently as last year because of budget adjustments, I can tell you that when you make budget adjustments, the first things that you look at are the things that are required in statute, the areas that we're being held accountable for, and I'm not saying it's right, I'm not saying it's wrong, but the area of career and tech is not an area where there, at this point there's a lot of requirements for those areas. And I do embrace that we have to make sure that our students are fully aware of all of their opportunities, and I think we can accomplish that at our schools and hope that down the road funding allows us to maintain all those programs.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Well, Senator Olson, we've not yet adopted your oral amendment. We've had a lengthy discussion on that, and so I'd ask that council reread that oral amendment, please.
Madam Chair.
Senator Tomasoni, just a moment, please. Can you reread that for us, please?
Madam Chair, members, page 1, line 17, delete licensed and insert registered. And then delete 141 and insert 136A.
Okay, so all those in favor of the Senator Tomasoni, can you wait until we adopt her amendment, please?
Well, before I vote on it, there might be more people that want to speak against it, and I'm wondering if you're going to listen to testimony or not.
Yes, we do have we have two more testifiers that will testify.
This is a big change to this bill.
Just to say, I'm not sure what we need to do with this.
This is testimony against the amendment.
Okay. We need to, is there anyone else who specifically wants to speak specifically to this amendment? We have it on the table, ready to vote, but are there, we have two testifiers left today who would, or one, I think, maybe just Ms. Allzweiger, who would like to testify. Was there someone else that I didn't see? And let me ask, as you come up to the table, but before you, before I recognize you, if your comments are specifically on this amendment. So, okay. Ms. Allzweiger? No. Okay. All those in favor of Senator Olson's oral amendment as read by counsel, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Same sign?
No.
No. Okay. I hear ayes have it. So the amendment is adopted. Then, Senator Olson, you did have an additional amendment, I believe, which is the A4.
The A4 amendment is to remove the fiscal impact of the fiscal notes. And that is the fiscal impact is attributable to the shift, the way the shift is accounted for, and how the money that would cost more to follow the formula that's in the statute for post-secondary enrollment options.
And
this changes that so that the shift part is not affected.
Thank you, Senator Olson. I know we have two more members who need to speak, but Mr. Nauman, did you have some more comments about this particular amendment?
Yes, so Madam Chair and members, the fiscal note may have, just as we spoke, and gone final, but preliminary information indicated there was a cost in the $260,000 range in fiscal 13. The primary reason for that cost is the misalignment between how the deduction for students that enroll in PSEO, students that are in the public school system that leave, are shifted. General education appropriation has both shifted and unshifted appropriations buried underneath it. And as part of the general ed appropriation, the PSEO money going out to the higher ed institutions is unshifted. So what you've got is a savings at a 60% level and then a spend at 100% level. So there's a misalignment. We think this this amendment deals with that issue on a one-time basis. In the tails, there's savings. We think we've got it with this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman. Is there any more discussion on the A4? Seeing none, all those in favor of the you did move the A4 amendment? Yes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Amendment adopted. All right, we have two testifiers and two committee members, three, who would like to speak. All right, we'll start briefly, 2 minutes each. So if you can kind of give us your best thoughts in 2 minutes, that'd be great. Ms. Allzweiger.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Olswiger, Education Minnesota, and I think that this is probably one of the most significant policy-changing bills that we have seen here in some time. So I hope that you're very thoughtful and you take your time in discussing this. And also, I will say that Senator Olson has been wonderful about her support for career and technical education. I'm taking a lot of my time here now, but I really want to thank her for that. And in the past, it's been within the school system and going on to the public post-secondary. This is a significant change, however. To keep this as short as possible, I think that there's a lot of irony here. Because your body has been trying to raise the standards for teachers, for the integrity of teachers, for students, standards, background checks, you name it. So the irony here is you pass a math grad requirement that kids are going to have to pass this test, yet they're not going to have to do that to go to this PSEO. Okay, that's fine. We already have the 11th and 12th. But moving it down to 9th and 10th is a significant change. Will they get the standards that you have passed in law? The superintendent talked about the travel time. You possibly will lose two classes. I am very, very concerned, and I think other parents should be very concerned, about no background checks are required. We pass laws in the House and the Senate here to require background checks for K-12 teachers, but yet we're going to have 14, 15-year-old girls go to a post-secondary institution where there are no background checks required. How are they going to get there? What transportation are they going to take? A lot of freedom, a lot of independence. And frankly, I think this body, part of their job is to keep kids safe and to make sure that they get a quality education.
Thank you, Ms. Olswiger. Mr. Schneiderwin.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Stein. I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. I, too, want to speak about Chairwoman Olson's effort in career and tech has been outstanding, and I think the approach here is a different approach. It's shifting the dynamics a little bit, and I think that when our association looks at PSEO opportunities, and I think we were probably one of the first ones to oppose it back in the 1980s, but since that time have evolved to a point where we have that issue before our delegate assembly every year, and they like the PSEO program as it is. So the shift to the 9th and 10th grade are issues of concern for us, to be clear. And I think her approach is dynamic, but I think the issues that Mr. Amoroso touched on are the issues of transportation and the emotional and social well-beings of those kids having the capacity to perform on the high or the post-secondary campus. The other issue that is not getting a lot of attention is the issue of advertising on here. Now we've opened up the issue where before post-secondary institutions didn't have that opportunity or were restricted from advertising. This now will allow institutions to promote and advertise on high school campuses or wherever it might be for earning post-secondary credits. And I'll leave it at that. And
Thank you very much. Mr. Schneiderwin. I believe Senator Bonhoeff, did you have a comment?
That's right. There's so many people. Just keep going. Okay. Well, Madam Chair, just
yes,
comment about the concern about putting the technical in the high schools. I think one of the reasons why high schools don't invest in that is because of the cost of equipment. It's not simple to have these tech ed programs in the schools, and so to the extent when we can have a marriage between an off-campus facility that's a higher ed institution and students who are interested in that, I think our ability to facilitate that actually saves money for both the school districts and the taxpayers. So I would just ask us to keep that in mind as a solution to the need to expand tech ed for these kids.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoeff. Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, I have an amendment that I think would be a Peace in the Valley amendment, if you want to know the truth. And I would like to offer an amendment to the bill. And what it would be to delete, after the period on line 114, delete everything up until the end of line 1.17. And I think that would mean that we should delete Section 4 also. And that way we take out the Section 136, Chapter 136 that we just put in, and the for-profit trade schools. And one of the reasons that I'm very concerned about this is because of the fact that you just now opened it up to 40 online schools under Chapter 136, opened it up to out-of-state schools, in Chapter 136, and all of a sudden we're going to be having kids paying out-of-state schools with our in-state money, and I really don't think that's acceptable. And it leaves the spirit of the bill intact. It still has 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders doing these technical and career programs. And I think you get what you want to go to, Senator Olson, because I quite frankly agree with you on the problem that we've had with vocational schools and the vocational programs in our schools, because of the fact that what has happened is because of declining enrollment. The superintendent also made the comments that they have to have budget cuts. Maybe our funding has been flat or not increased enough for schools to maintain the vocational programs. And so the first thing they do is they cut the most expensive one and the ones that aren't required. And so what ends up happening is we lose those vocational programs. College in the schools has come around. We have something on the Iron Range called Applied Learning Institute, which is doing exactly that. It's reaching into the schools and trying to teach the kids these technical and vocational programs. And so I would really like you to accept this amendment, Senator Olson, because I believe that what it does is it keeps the spirit of your bill alive, and it doesn't create what I believe is a controversy in this particular bill because of how the funding goes. And so I would make that motion, Madam Chair. If you'd like me to clarify it, I will.
Senator Olson, would you like to speak to that amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Tomasoni, I believe that provision in there. There may be some additional fine tuning to it because of the effort that we made to assure that they were accredited schools that were participating, that were eligible to be a part of it. But I think that it was an important avenue to assure that this is allowed as far as an option for young people to pursue at our public institutions. That's my first choice because I believe we have excellent programs and they're well equipped, and it would be good to have them used. Greater assurance from the MNSCU that in fact these opportunities would be made available would increase my comfort with your amendment. All of the things that have been thrown up is the negatives were, many of them were very similar to what we heard when post-secondary enrollment options came about back in Governor Perpich's time. And the reality is, you know, people do, I think, I give our students and our teachers and our parents credit for thinking through some of these issues as to whether that's a good choice for their child to do. To take one class as an exploratory one, whether they have the capacity. We've never posed funding transportation, and we wouldn't start it now, even though these kids wouldn't have driver's license yet. So that may be a barrier, but it may not. If a parent feels that their kid's going to drop out of school and they recognize that they have some interest, they may bend over backwards to see if their kid could succeed there and actually open some excitement to staying in school and completing. You know, I don't see a flood. This isn't going to be a flood of students, you know, going this route, but it is an option.
So Senator Olson spoke to your amendment. Senator Tomasori, do you still want to offer that amendment?
I think she agreed with me, so I think I do want to offer my amendment.
Well, Senator Olson.
I think we've got one more testifier here, but I think we aren't ready to vote on this, and I would probably rather have the amendments, that have the provision stay in your amendment, be laid on the table for our further consideration, but don't abandon it.
And did I understand you to say, Madam Chair, Senator Olson, that we're not going to vote on the bill today?
Well, I'm suggesting that we not.
We will
right
lay
now.
The.
If you're not going to vote on the bill today, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Olson and Senator Tomasoni. I think a lot of questions were brought up today.
Yes.
A lot of good discussion that can certainly be taken up in higher ed. And so those of you who are on higher ed, I think, can relay some of those concerns. With that, we have one more testifier, and I also see Senator Stump.
Madam Chair, just a question, and maybe the next testifier can clear that up. Where do we pick up the online programs? Are they under the 136
yes.
amendment that was adopted?
Could you identify yourself for the tape, please?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Darren Cordy. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Education. I can't speak to that personally. I would defer to OHE since they're the ones that would license those programs. So regarding Senator Stump's question, I'm not sure which of the two, whether it's the eligible institutions or if it's 136A that the online schools are picked up at.
Senator Stump, is that something we could get answered in higher ed? Okay, well, thank you.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Olson.
I would like to, I'm not sure how many career tech programs operate on online, even a beginning class. I think part of the issue is getting in there and having some hands-on in a lab kind of setting. So I need some understanding and clarification, too, whether the online schools actually meet the criteria of the eligibility for the
Senator Olson, we'll be giving higher ed a package. It sounds like we're giving them some homework in this regard. Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, you keep saying higher ed, but Senator Olson said we're not going to vote on this today, so that means it's going to stay here for a while, correct?
That's right.
I think I would prefer that because I think we do need to address some of these questions. And when we make some major policy changes, I think we need to have some open discussion, and I'm not afraid of that.
Okay, so it may eventually get to higher ed, but certainly not right away. All right. Please continue.
Madam Chair, members, once again, Darren Cordy for the Minnesota Department of Education. I definitely appreciate Chair Olson for bringing this bill forward. As you know, MD and Commissioner Caselius have been vocal advocates of PSEO programs and expanding student access to career and tech programs. We did have some concerns with this bill, and it is kind of pertinent to the conversation that was taking place with Senator Tomasoni here. Under this bill, you basically have two paths as a student if you're not accepted by a MNSCU program. The first path would be that you could apply to an eligible institution offering CTE courses. I think it's important for members to understand what an eligible institution is. In 124D909 subdivision 3, that would eligible institutions are public, post-secondary institutions, private, nonprofit, two-year trade and tech schools granting associate degrees, centers accredited by the National Association of Colleges and Schools, or private residential liberal arts degree granting colleges or universities located in Minnesota. So I think what you'll find is a lot of the schools which are registered under 136A are already covered by this first part of the language. You'll find schools like St. Ben's, St. Kate's, Luther College, Augsburg, Dunwoody, Gustavus, Hamlin, McAllister. So private non-for-profit schools in that vein. And then the second option would be that you could apply at a trade school under 136A. And I think what Senator Olson has acknowledged and what has been discussed is that language is a little vague as to what is a trade school.
Mr. Cordy, we'll take that up as we bring up the bill again. I think those are very good comments. Is there anything else, Mr. Cordy?
No, that's all, ma'am, and we look forward to seeing what you're able to come together. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Senator Olson moves that Senate File 1531 be laid on the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes. Thank you, members, and those who didn't get to testify today, it looks like you'll have another day. Thank you.
That works.
Just look up 136.
Well, go to the...